Hey there, welcome to Progress and Perfection, a recovery-themed, Christian-flavored daily reflection. Join us now for episode 3 of the deep dive into the big book of AA. My name is Eamon, I'm joined with my buddy John, and we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff from Zima to Miss Chloe to Dr. Limits, mental control, and the classification of alcoholics. It should be fun. You can find more info about the show at progressandperfection.com.
Good to see you, friend.
Likewise.
Always a pleasure.
We're back.
I don't have any idea where we left off.
I was wondering that too. I had full intentions all week of getting the book out, reviewing what we had done, then prepping for what we're about to do.
You know, and I thought about that. I was reminded of that mental note that I made for myself when I got out of the car at your house.
Yes, excellent.
And then I was like, oh, yeah, that might have been a good idea.
Could have helped. No, that's where we left off, because now we get into the meat of it.
That's where we left off.
Ba-bum.
All right, right on.
All right, you want to go?
Sure.
Read it up.
All right, men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol.
Shocker.
Yeah. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after a time differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity. All right, let's just pause there for a second. Okay, because like I feel like that's just absolutely loaded. That sensation that it's talking about. Like, first of all, let's just be honest. I love the feeling I get when I drink a beer.
Yeah.
Like, it's great.
Ease and comfort. I mean, that's the perfect description.
Loosen up a little bit, you know, take the edge off a little bit. You know, I'm not too exaggerated, but I feel a little bit more comfortable in my own skin. You know, like, I don't know. It's a wonderful feeling.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think, like, I like the way he phrases it because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's true. In my experience, that was 100% true. Even as it pertained to, like, I get it, like, we're talking about alcohol, but even as it pertained to, like, my crack addiction.
Yeah.
Like, dude, the freaking first hit of crack was, like, the greatest thing of all time. Your face goes numb, your ears ring, maybe get a little nauseous. You know, it's this full body, just almost orgasmic experience that comes with that first hit.
Yeah.
You know, and then, like, that second sentence there, the sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. So I love that part. Because, like, yeah, I'm not going to admit to myself that this is problematic, that the way I feel is problematic. And I want to hear from you also on this. But, like, as I would move from, like, the first drink into the second drink or the first to the third drink or fill in the blank, whatever drug or whatever it is, as I slowly moved from off of the first to the second or to the third, like it said, you cannot differentiate between the true from the false. Like, I would become this false self. You know what I'm saying? Like, early on, yeah, one beer allows me to loosen up and maybe, like, take the edge off. But all of a sudden, if I'm, like, 3, 4, 5 deep, suddenly I'm becoming someone that I'm not. Mm-hmm. It's not just this exaggeration of who I am. It's literally like this false self that's beginning to emerge.
Yeah.
I don't know. How did you experience it when you would use?
Much the same. Like, there's, when you first said that sense of ease and comfort from the first drink, my immediate thought was, and then the second one, that's even better.
Mm-hmm.
And there is like a happy, I'll use the word happy because I think it's appropriate.
Yeah, yeah.
There's like a happy middle ground.
Right.
At, you know, somewhere in 2, 3, 4, where you become an amplified, you know, the sensation is an amplified version of yourself,
right,
where I do kind of just, I've arrived somewhere. I'm okay in my own skin. But then at some point you crest this hill, and I did too. And almost from the beginning, I mean, I remember that, like, the first drinks I ever had, we were drinking Zima. Remember with Zima?
Oh,
I drink Zima.
I saw the funniest meme. I don't know. I'm sure it's out there somewhere on the interwebs. You could find it.
Yeah.
But it's got like, it's a Scooby-Doo thing.
Yeah.
And it's got like one of the pictures is like, let's find out who you really are. And it's like a can of White Claw. And it pulled a White Claw up and it's a Zima bottle underneath.
So yeah, that's classic.
That's great.
OG Zima drinks.
Yes.
It's hilarious.
But those were like, I remember the very first ones where, you know, we got a six pack probably or something. It's like, oh, okay, let's drink.
Yeah.
And you get through one. It's like, okay, nothing's going on much. Kind of feel a little, I think I feel something. And then you keep going, but then you crest and it's like, okay, this is, I start getting hazy and fuzzy. You know, the drunkenness starts to set in.
Yep.
And I did, I think that's a great description. You start becoming something that is not the version of yourself that you're meant to be.
Right.
And to me, the next morning is like a reset. I mean, I think that's the way it is for a lot of us. It's like, okay, reset. I can cut off who I became at the end of last night.
Right.
And then I'm right back to not admitting that it was injurious.
Right.
You know, and a lot of times it wasn't. It's, you know,
sure,
got through the night in high school, partying, and then on to the next day.
Yeah.
But immediately it's like, oh, okay, well, I think I can find that spot in between 2, 3, 4 again.
Yep.
And I was anxious to.
Yep.
You know,
and you're chasing that spot.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right? With all the ones that come after that.
Absolutely.
You're chasing that feeling of like after 3 or 4, you know, and you're drinking more and more because I want to get back to this
place. You keep adding to thinking that you're going to subtract yourself back to where you wanted to be.
Yeah.
It just never works.
Yeah. And I think like the other thing I was that stood out to me is like his use of the word injurious, because even as a doctor, I mean, all alcohol is poison. You know, and it's like the inability to recognize that I'm drinking like literal poison.
Yeah.
You know, that this is actually injurious behavior. Even ingesting wine is injurious behavior to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
But to drink copious quantities, it's ridiculous. I mean, what it does to your body. You know, it's crazy. It's nuts.
It's insane.
And, you know, we're going to come back to this idea, restless, irritable, and discontented.
Mm.
Again and again and again. I think that's just like, that's part of the deal.
Well, and last thing I'll say here is there's was such an amplification of, it was a realization of the fact that I was looking for something that wasn't there when I began those first drinking days. I didn't realize that I was restless, irritable, and discontent until I had some alcohol or some fill-in-the-blank drugs, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I get to the reset to the next day and realize, oh, I was seeking something there. And I did find it for a minute, and I'm going to go back to it.
Right.
And that just became uber amplified.
Yeah.
Out of the gate for me.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. All right. After they succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. Smack in the face there.
Yeah.
You know, and I have like over here quoted on here, it's like binging.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of binging, repeating it over and over again as the quantity just continues to increase. And I mean, that just like, you know, I mean, that resonates with me 100%.
How long do you think it was before you started making these firm resolutions not to drink again? Because that's kind of hazy for me. That was not super early,
right.
but it didn't take a long time either for me to realize, okay, they maybe not have been firm resolutions in the beginning.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. I can remember like being in high school drinking at parties and binge drinking and just getting freaking hammered and puking my brains out and waking up the next day and be like, I'm not doing that again.
Yeah.
I'm sure at the time it was, had seriousness attached to it, but probably no real seriousness. But it's interesting, you know, I don't know that I ever had that experience when I became, let's say, a professional addict.
Hmm.
You know, my using, it's, you know, it's so weird. Like I had this, I don't know, I was talking to a colleague today briefly about this, but this idea that like no one really sets out to become what they become in addiction. And I can remember being a kid watching Miami Vice and watching this commercial. This was back in the freaking 80s, you know, as a kid, but watching this commercial and it said like, nobody ever grows up to say they want to be a drug addict. And I can remember like making like a vow with myself at like this young age of like 10 years old of like, I want to be a drug addict when I grow up, having no real no real idea of what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And I think like once I became like a professional drug addict, I don't know that I ever had a problem with it. You know, and I think that speaks partly to the spiritual experience that I incurred in my using also, because I mean, I was very much in touch with like the demonic, you know, and the occult at the time. And so I was inviting all of this sort of self-destruction in and with real no cause to stop it.
Yeah.
So it was weird. Like, man, when I was using up until the time I went to COPAC, I don't know that it ever entered my brain like, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to stop. It was more just like full board. Like,
so you had crested that becoming and then just started to invite it in.
Yes.
Like, okay, I'm there. Let's keep going.
Totally. Yeah. It like, as it pertains to substance use, but also like I was saying, as it pertained to the more like sinister, black, evil sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I was more than content to be the worst person that God had ever seen on the planet. And it was kind of like, I'm going to prove this out to me. You know, it was weird. It was weird just thinking about like that experience as a kid and really sort of making that declarative statement over myself and not really understanding the consequences of what I was tying myself to, the vow that I was tying myself to.
Wow.
Yeah, it was wild. So that, I don't know that I ever did. How about you? Like, did you hit these points in your using where you're like, I'm never doing it again?
Yeah, I did. And it was a constant, I don't know how firm of resolution I had either, but throughout my, you know, post high school for me, it was like a year and a half window until I went down to COPAC and sobered up. And I started really heavily drinking into high school, kind of senior year. And I think the alcoholic tendencies were established there, you know, did pot and other stuff a little bit. But then it was really full-fledged into that next level of addiction, if you will, post high school.
Yeah.
And it was during that period, particularly like in high school, I was like, whatever. I was, you know, giving the finger to my parents, you know, not really wanting to have anything to do with all the things. But during that second phase of the addiction for me, I remember it was like a cyclical thing almost daily to where, okay, I'm going to go get screwed up. I'm going to get this, get that, get alcohol, get drugs, get pills, and then just become real remorseful by the end of the day.
Yeah.
Praying before I go to bed, the classic foxholes stuff. I don't want to do this. Not every day, but I remember that as like the pattern and just being caught in the vicious cycle of, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
But I want to do this.
Right.
And I can't imagine doing this again tomorrow. And then tomorrow comes, I can't imagine not doing it again.
Yeah.
What's the alternative? What am I going to, I need to become something. So I think there is a transformational aspect that can lead to a dark place.
Yeah, for sure.
Or that can ultimately, what we're being called towards,
lead
to who we're supposed to grow into and become.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I was young, we were both young, but I do think the seeds of that good aspect of it were just rooted enough in the surface level to where I knew that I should try to cling on to this.
Right.
And I just couldn't.
Yeah, and I will say, like, I think that's a much more traditional, that's the much more traditional pattern that occurs with most people who are addicts and alcoholics, is they do experience this shame and guilt post-use, you know, that typically produces some level of unmanageability that gets their attention.
Yeah.
you know, that does lead them to these thoughts of like, man, I've got to do something about this. I've got to like relent, you know, something's got to give here. Right. But then you're caught with the mental craving the next day, you know, and it's just like the obsessiveness takes over. You know, the ritual kicks in and then it's off to the races again.
Mm-hmm.
Man, this stuff is crazy.
Brutal, man.
People that do drugs. What about this psychic change, man? Like this statement I think is just
entire power. Psychic change.
Yeah, power, right? Repeated over and over, unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. That's a serious statement.
It's a big statement. And I've used it almost flippantly throughout my sobriety at times because it's become such a normal like aspect of what the process entails and requires. Like, you got to have a psychic change. You got to work the steps so that you may have a psychic change, so that God can do for you what you can't do. All these things that kind of become mantras. I mean, they are mantras for better or worse in our heads. But I still think this is true. Like, I don't think that an alcoholic, that a drug addict that I've seen can actually get better without this psychic change.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about kind of the moral aspect of stuff last week or week before.
Yeah.
And I think that's wrapped up in this to a degree.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so like, what's a psychic change? Like, what does that even mean?
So it's... The way I was explained to this is it's a spiritual change that takes place as a result of the steps, where we're replacing our drive basically to become something and fill this hole in ourselves with the desires of the flesh. And we're replacing that with something else. And in our case, it's God. It's a spiritual way of life. That somehow through the practical workings that the book details, gives enough relief from just that constant, you know, the psychic part of it for me that needed changing first was I need to stop the gears turning up here that reset every morning and make me go want to get a fix.
Yeah.
And I need to put something, anything in there
that's
not all about me. And so it's almost a redirection type of thing.
Yeah.
To where I really got to get misdirected away from what I want and onto anything else. You, him, her, whatever.
Yeah.
So that hopefully I can seek the ultimate power, the solution, God, to come in and change this this desire to become something that I'm not supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That word is like, so part of that word, like, just reminds me of Miss Cleo. You remember Miss Cleo?
Nah.
Y'all remember Miss Cleo out there? Google her if you do. She was a psychic. She was like one of those phone-in psychics.
Miss Cleo.
I was thinking Ms. Copac Cleo. Or something. No. Gotcha. She was a phone-in psychic. It was hilarious at one point in time. An apartment I had, the neighbors, when they moved out, left their phone lines on. I don't know who you were. If this was you, I apologize. Call me. I'll repay your bill. But we plugged into their phone line because it was still active.
Yes.
They pulled the phone over into our apartment.
Yes.
And we'll sit there for hours calling Miss Cleo. And Miss Cleo charged like by the minute. You know what I'm saying? And but like we'd be calling Miss Cleo. But that term, like psychic change, I think can be very... I don't know. I'll just say it. I think it can be very confusing and I think it can be very misleading. And I think it does have the potential to lead people down a path that could potentially be dangerous.
Mm.
Because I think the way that you're reading into that idea of psychic change is how I would read into it, which is like a spiritual awakening, which I think the book references also.
Yeah.
But this initial imprint of an entire psychic change, I think it's an interesting way to set the precedent for that.
Hmm.
Because I agree with you. Like, to me, it was a spiritual change, you know, and like the Holy Spirit had to zap me for me to be able to like wake up and see the potential that the Lord wanted me to see, you know, to I don't know, actualize the thing that I was to become.
Hmm.
I had to be able to see it. And the only way I could see it was if like the indwelling Spirit allowed me to see it. And so like when I read that's how I read it. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like how you read it.
Mm-hmm.
like, yeah, I need an entire psychic change. I need a spiritual awakening. Like, I need the spirit to dwell in me so I can wake up with this stuff. But I think, yeah, I don't know. I think that's a little bit misleading. Just the choice of word there. But I do agree with this. Like, whether it's a psychic change, a spiritual change, or whatever kind of change, the second half of that's true. There is very little hope of his recovery. I agree 100% with that. But I guess that's my double jeopardy there, though, is if it's just a psychic change, there's still very little hope of recovery in terms of like becoming that person that you desire to be or becoming that person that the Lord desires you to be. Yeah, you might get clean and sober because I had a call Miss Cleo. You know, she helped me out and I got clean and sober. But do I have hope?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. What's that old timey hymn? My hope is built in nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I don't know. I guess that's where I go with the whole thing.
There's got to be some substance underneath that psychic change stuff.
I think so.
This kind of the other thing it kind of makes me think about is like brainwashing.
Mm.
You know, you remember people like, oh, hey, he's just brainwashing you. And of course, the comeback to that is, well, I needed a brainwashing. Among other things, like that's a starting point. But not an ending point too.
Yeah, that's the type of language that, let's say, maybe 2, 3, 4 decades ago, the church would have latched onto and been like, these guys are a cult.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because they'd see a term like that and just be, to your point, like, you guys are just being brainwashed and we're going to call him Miss Cleo all the time to get sober. Miss Cleo. Google Miss Cleo.
Yes.
On the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. Let's freaking go.
Go, go. The steps, baby, right there.
Right? I don't know. I feel like, let's see. Yeah, that. I think that's, this is the hope.
Hmm.
You know what I'm saying? I guess like, you know, I sit with a lot of parents of addicts or alcoholics or spouses of addicts or alcoholics. And I think like this is sort of the hope that I try to give to them is that despite what it may look like, despite how doomed or hopeless or how bleak of a situation, that there is a solution. There is a way that this person can be helped, that not all is lost. And so I think, again, like this whole dang thing's chalked up full of good stuff. But I think that's a very important statement that can give a lot of hope for families.
Despite all appearances to the contrary, because you've seen it, I've seen it. The people that you don't think are going to last at all end up having psychic, spiritual change, complete rearrangement of their lives. Provided, now this is a short sentence, provided that they follow, what does it say? The only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules. That's a short phrase with a world of meaning, like to follow a few simple rules, to follow through with the steps. I mean, basically saying, you got to do this every day, one day at a time, marching in that direction to become a new creation.
Yep.
And inviting him in to allow that to happen. So it's not like it's just going to pop, but the hope is there to your point.
Right.
And you know, and we've also seen the flip being true of people. Okay. What's going on? They're still drinking. They're going back out. They look from the outside looking in like, oh, everything's okay, but something has not occurred on the inside.
Right.
I had a chick tell me years ago, she was in the AA community. I forget her name, but knew her when I first started going to meetings, down in Jackson and like a few years went by and ran into her and she's like, oh, you're still, I, I figured you would have won the last two. It's like, what the heck?
Yeah, that's funny.
But I mean, your case, I was case in point.
Right.
Like, it'll work for even little old me.
Yeah. No, agreed. I think, I mean, I can certainly look at myself, my younger self, and be like, there's no way that would work.
Yeah.
I think also, like, people can buck at this. Hmm. This idea of rules, you know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to, like, you know, rewrite the book by any means. But there are plenty of personalities. There's plenty of people who would read that line and be like, I'm not following these rules.
Yes.
Says who?
F that.
You know, they've been maybe abused by rules, whether through the system or whether by the church or whether by their parents, you know, where they've run into these real authoritarian, like, do what I say or else type of rules, which has probably led them into their drinking and using careers, you know, just sort of taking autonomy and taking control where they can and being like, you know, F you guys. Right. And so I think, like, that's a place also for us to be mindful. Those of us who are trying to help people out, either through sponsorship or counseling or coaching, whatever that might look like, that if we are to, I don't know, authoritarian with the rules, it can really be off-putting. That's why I like the term steps. It's much more palatable.
Well, interesting, right? Because we're hearing the doctor's opinion with verbiage like that.
Yep.
Where a little bit later, we're going to get into the step work and their suggestions. Like, I forget the exact wording and how it works. But right. I mean, right. It's suggestions.
Right.
They're good suggestions.
Yeah, they're not even steps at that point.
You ought to take them. But that's kind of the attitude.
That's more palatable, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Men have cried out to me in sincere and despairing appeal. Doctor, I cannot go on like this. I have everything to live for. I must stop, but I cannot. You must help me. Faced with this problem, if a doctor is honest with himself, he must sometimes feel his own inadequacy. Although he gives all that is in him, it often is not enough. One feels that something more than human power is needed to produce the essential psychic change. Though the aggregate of recoveries resulting from psychiatric effort is considerable, we physicians must admit we have made little impression upon the problem as a whole. Many types do not respond to the ordinary psychological approach.
Yeah, my man Silkworth just reiterating his right place here.
Yeah.
You know, seeing the hope of this program,
right,
but not overstepping, like, yeah, there's going to be hospitalization needed, like we talked about,
but
it's just not going to cure the problem.
Yeah. Well, yeah, just to touch on that briefly, you know, I'll work with some alcoholics who are that guy that's crying out, like, who's looking at me like, I can't go on like this, but I can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, legitimate. You know, they've reached the level of dependency where they not just the physical ramifications of dependency, but the psychological ramifications of it also, you know, and I firmly believe them. And sometimes the physician plays an essential role in that, either through detox, but also through drugs like and abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you know, cause you to get extremely sick when and if you choose to drink. You know, but I think if that's the only implementation to get the person sober, they miss out on everything else that they're trying to gain.
Yeah.
Sure, they've stopped drinking, but, like, yeah, they lose out on, like, recovery.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like,
the substance of it.
Yeah. They're sober.
To what end?
Yeah, but not sober-minded.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, I don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting. I do not hold with those who believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. I have had many men who had, for example, worked a period of months on some problem or business deal, which was to be settled on a certain date favorably to them. They took a drink a day or so prior to the date, and then the phenomenon of craving at once became paramount to all other interests, so that the important appointment was not met. These men were not drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control. There are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight. Where have you seen that occur in your career, your using career?
Suicides, man.
Mm.
You know, I had a guy I worked with, and he was sober when he took his life. And I was working with him as a sponsor-sponsee relationship maybe 10, 15 years ago. And he was maybe a year or two sober. And just, you know, he was not willing to go get honest about something.
Yeah.
Not willing to go through entirely with what the process requires. And it, you know, not the only one, that was the closest one to me, that made that supreme sacrifice.
Right. Yeah, it's a very creative way of self-sabotage.
Mm.
You know, in the extreme situation like you're referring to, where there may be this thing that's unaddressed that's out there that the person has just been unwilling to address.
Mm-hmm.
And it just reaches this just tension point that becomes unbearable to the poor guy, where he feels as though there is no other way, there is no other solution rather than, you know, taking the out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also see it in like the self-sabotage in these very creative ways. Like I'll see it in marriages, you know, where there's this thing that could potentially be fixed in the marriage, but the person just sabotages it through their acting out or their using or their drinking, you know, even after they put together some clean days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the reference of business, a business deal. I don't know that I've seen that exact one,
yeah.
You know, but it's very, you know, that's the cool thing about alcoholics and drug addicts is that we are very crafty.
We are, if nothing else.
Like, we're very, very crafty, and we get very, very creative to avoid things that we want to avoid. You know, and we can fool ourselves with all kinds of rationalizations and justifications and polarizations and minimizations and all the assertions that we want to in order to avoid the thing that we need to be confronting. You know?
It's the lying when the truth is easier situation.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, just get, yeah, just, but unknowingly, or maybe even knowingly, digging the hole even deeper, you know? I don't know, we're creative. We're creative people. All right, one more paragraph?
Yep.
The classification of alcoholics seems most difficult and in much detail is outside the scope of this book. There are, of course, the psychopaths who are emotionally unstable. I got lots to say about that.
Mm-hmm.
We are all familiar with this type. They are always going on the wagon for keeps. They are over remorseful and make many resolutions, but never a decision. Let me read this next paragraph to you because it ties right into that. There is the type of man who is unwilling to admit that he cannot take a drink. He plans various ways of drinking. He changes his brand or his environment. There is the type who always believes that after being entirely free from alcohol for a period of time, he can take a drink without danger. There is the manic depressive type, who is perhaps the least understood by his friends, and about whom a whole chapter could be written. Then there are types entirely normal in every respect, except for the effect alcohol has upon them. They are often able, intelligent, friendly people. I think that's a beautiful description there of lots of different types of drunks. I mean, the one that I was that's got me into plenty of trouble over the course of my life, there's the type who always believes that after being entirely free from alcohol for a period of time, he can take a drink without danger. I mean, that's what got me back, like, out of Copac. I convinced myself, like, oh, well, you know, I went to Copac for drugs.
Yeah.
This thing ain't a problem.
Yeah.
You know, and quickly turned my life into a tailspin of absolute turmoil. You know, but then I think, like, it's interesting, like, he references the psychopaths who are emotionally unstable. I mean, I do believe that there are some people who cannot get sober.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me I'm wrong, but I believe that. I believe that you could give them every type of program, drug, pill, whatever, even psychic cleansing and spiritual experiences, and they couldn't get clean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's tragic and it's sad, but I think, like, I've seen those types of guys before. I can remember one I worked with in Mississippi who ended up drinking himself to death. Great guy, super intelligent, super bright, super creative, wife and kids, you know, and he ended up dying in a hotel room from vodka, like literally from vodka, mm-hmm. not suicide, but drank himself to death. And he's one of those guys that I think, like, he wasn't a psychopath, he just couldn't stop. Mm. You know what I'm saying? He just couldn't stop. And I think it, like, you know, that always impresses upon me, like, the seriousness of this whole deal. You know, that there are plenty of people who wish that they could stop who cannot stop for whatever reason. And, you know, anytime we choose to go back out there, we're playing Russian roulette because there, by the grace of God, go I.
And do you think it comes down, and I do, to honesty? Mm-hmm. You know, that, that whole statement about constitutionally incapable of mm-hmm. being honest with themselves. Mm-hmm. The, those who don't recover are constitutionally mm-hmm. incapable of being honest. Because mm-hmm. I think at the, like, at the end of the day, if I'm able to honestly take stock, maybe by myself, maybe with the help of counsel from friends or others, mm-hmm. And actually honestly look at the state of things and the state of how they've gone so far off kilter.
Yeah.
Like for me, that was my treatment experience, really, is I, for the first time, honestly took stock of things, accepted that they were completely screwed. And yeah, maybe I don't know everything. Shocker. and start like making a bunch of wrong decisions, but roughly going in the right direction toward recovery.
Yeah.
Versus, I don't know if I, it's hard for me to swallow, like, there are people who cannot. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I think I've got too much optimism today to co-sign that.
That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here.
Like, there's the always, business. Like, there's always a chance, but I do, like, I do agree that, you know, at a certain point there's not.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And I think, like, so maybe, maybe it's like a declaration or a vow, mm-hmm. like to your point, maybe there is this moment in time when the person is capable of being honest with themselves, but their life literally is dependent upon that moment and their ability to be honest. And if they choose not to be honest in that moment.
Or even recognize the moment.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Or even recognize it. That moment and how crucial that moment is.
Yeah.
Then I think, like, yeah, they can sort of be given over to their drink, mm-hmm. you know, or to their drug. Because, like, they were presented this momentary opportunity. I'm just thinking about the guy I was referencing a second ago. And yeah, I think there was probably a time in his life where he could have stopped mm. if he had been honest with himself. Mm. But by the time I met with him, by the time he came to treatment,
yeah.
I mean, his skin was yellow.
Yeah.
You know, and his eyes were yellow. And I mean, like, his liver was basically gone at that point.
Yeah.
And so, like, he was faced with, like, I don't know, the unfortunate reality that death is right around the corner. The moment for honesty may have passed him by.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's tragic to think about and it's sad to think about. But maybe there is sort of this, like, moment in time that the Lord gives to us where we decide not to take advantage of that opportunity. And there could potentially be lifelong ramifications for that afterwards. Now, let me just say as a quick point of clarification, this guy was a believer, mm-hmm. and I'm not referencing his salvation. I think his salvation yeah. was intact.
Yeah.
I think he just died by his sin,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Christ's blood washed it away. Each and every day he was alive, and I have no doubt he's sitting in eternity, and I can't wait to see him. But yeah, and God, I mean, he's probably up there right now being like, you're wrong, you moron. Maybe, I don't know. Or I don't know. I think it will be an interesting conversation that I can have with him, when I get there of like, was there that time? Was there that moment that you can reflect on now and go, yeah, that was my chance. That was my opportunity. And I fucked it. I fucked it up.
Cause I kind of think, looking at my shorter stint, I kind of think that because I went to treatment here before I went down to Copac. Mm-hmm. And so just in this conversation, like, well, I guess this is kind of tracking because I had a pause. Mm-hmm. I had an opportunity and then right back on and then another pause. And then it took, right. so to speak.
Right. Right.
And I wonder if there's just finite amounts of opportunity. Sure. I mean, there are.
Yeah,
right? It's
for
just
sure.
a matter of how many who gets and
sure,
how
yeah.
far you progress.
And maybe it doesn't even have to be like I died by my alcohol, but like all of a sudden I got in a car wreck and died because
mm-hmm.
I was drunk
yeah.
or I OD'd because I got some bad dope or whatever it is, you know, but you're sort of like your end of life is directly correlated to your substance.
Yeah.
You know, and your substance use. So yeah, I don't know. There's a lot. I don't know. Whatever. It's interesting.
Speaking of end of life.
Are we done?
Are we done?
Are we done with the podcast forever? Are we going to do it again? Are we going to come back?
Absolutely. We will come back please from the dead. Back.
All right.
We may even do a voice, a phone call-in on the next one.
Yeah.
Our schedules are going to be a little bit tight for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think that will be very interesting. Yeah. Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Ladies just and wait. Gents, for just the surprise wait. That could potentially be occurring next time we meet. All right. Always a pleasure.
Awesome. Enjoyed it.
Thank you all.
Hey, thanks for listening. You can find more information about this show as well as the daily newsletter over at progressandperfection.com. Have a great one.